Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Alberto Orsini, a UX designer and co-founder at Tech Digital and previously leading design teams at HBO. And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about, creating and building successful design teams. This episode is brought to you by Double Your Freelancing Conference, a conference for freelancers and agencies who want to get better at the business of consulting. It's located in Stockholm, Sweden, between 16th and 19th of June. You can find out more at doubleyourfreelancing.com/euconf. I'm speaking there too and would love to meet you in person. Hi, Alberto.
Hi, thank you for having me, Jane.
Well, thank you for making the time. We're thrilled.
I'm really happy to be here. I'm an avid listener to your podcast, and I really enjoy what you do for the design community. You have some great interviews in this program.
Fantastic. Thank you. So we're going to start with a Blitz questionnaire. And to make it fast, question number one is, what do you do for a living?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, I'm the chief design officer and co-founder at Tech Digital. We actually do a little bit of, we split our time, 50%. We actually do consulting with people that are building their own products. And the other 50%, we're actually building our own product called Feel.ai. That's with an extra E. We've been building it for the past couple of months. Hopefully, we're going to be launching pretty soon. And I can tell you a little bit more about that if you're interested. Right now, we're actually accepting beta signups. So our product, what it basically allows you to do is to deploy video campaigns. If you're a vlogger, if you're a YouTuber, or if you lead the social media team at a company, you can deploy videos and conduct focus groups and receive emotional responses from your audience.
So is it for focus groups and testing, or is it like for general audience, just to make a better understanding of it?
It can be used for general audiences. The use case that we're going at the beginning is what I'm most comfortable with, which is focus group and market research arena. So,
Sounds great. Tell us a little bit more how you got started as a designer and how did you get to where you are today?
Well, very early on, I just wanted to play with computers, to be honest. I used to draw a lot, so graphic design was sort of like a good fit for me. But also, when I started my career, I was working in print, and I was very fascinated by web, and I think a lot of people in my generation got started tinkering around with their MySpace page and their horrible version of HTML. So that got me really curious. And of course, with my MySpace, I wanted to do, like animated GIFs and all of that. So that got me into the whole world of, web design and a little bit of front-end development. I wouldn't go as far as call myself a developer, but I know my basic HTML, CSS, a little bit of JavaScript. But at the beginning, I was really set in sort of growing my career, and what in my head back then, what that meant was climbing a corporate ladder. I didn't know anything about any startups or anything like that. So to me, it was a natural progression to sort of move from print to web and then to UI design. And after I played with that for a little bit, I started leading teams, and eventually I went into actual management. But what I found really interesting about management, I'm a very atypical manager in the sense that, and I think pretty much everybody wants to do this nowadays, but I just hung out with my team, to be honest. I want to, and I don't say this lightly, I wanted to ensure that they were learning, that they were teaching me everything. One thing that people don't mention is that as a manager, you do as much learning as you do teaching. That got me through my career working for different media companies, actually building their user experience team. And now I still, to this day, as a on a consulting basis, I help startups or companies build their UX team internally as well.
Sounds like a great story. Oh, what does your typical day look like?
I think that's a very good question, and I've been listening to previous episodes, and I feel like a lot of people say my days are not too typical, and that's true for me as well. However, they generally start with talking to my team in the morning, just planning out our days, you know, nothing too unusual there. And then the rest of the day, it really depends on, like I said, if we're working on our internal product or if I'm working with some of my consulting clients. So I tend to bounce a lot between discovery and design, high fidelity design. So I'll spend my days doing research or conceptualizing, and everything I do tends to point, you know, towards testing or releasing a product. I'm very, very focused in the whole, you know, web apps and mobile apps. And we're tinkering a lot at my company with AI at the moment and neural networks, all of that good stuff. I would have to point you to my CTO if you need too many technical details there. But but yeah, I love the process of just conceptualizing and doing a lot of research. That's really what drives me.
How large is your team these days?
It's very, very tiny. And in fact, it's not what I'm used to. I'm used to a team of, you know, anywhere from 6 to 10 people, which actually, for a design team, that's pretty large. I talked to companies, you know, I was at HBO Latin America, and I talked to a lot of people from Comcast, for example, and their design team, you know, ranges from, same thing, 6 to 10 people. Right now, I just have one designer working remotely from Puerto Rico, and actually my wife, which I'm lucky enough, but you know, she's a designer as well, and I'm Veronica. She helps me a lot with some of my client work that I do, so that I can have more time to focus on our own product.
Sounds like a great setup. You're pretty lucky.
I feel that way, definitely.
But at least you're not the only one doing design work, because that's what usually happens with design founders.
Yes. Yeah. And at the beginning I was, it takes a little bit of getting used to, especially coming from a background of, you know, for the past, I would say like 8 years, I've been working, in medium to big teams, and, you know, not having anybody at the beginning, I feel like it can give you a little bit of a, daily crisis almost, and how do you divide your time? And there's great tools out there, but tools alone, you know, are not going to be able to do anything for you. You have to really sit down and take notes, plan your days, and it's definitely interesting going from one to the other.
Yes, I think when I quit agency work, the range of emotions went as far as I finally get to do everything myself perfectly is one range, and the other is, oh wait, but who I delegate this to? Like, yeah. Where is that person I can delegate it to?
I would have the weirdest moments where I would either wake up and feel like I'm in trouble, like I'm late for something. This is my second time as an entrepreneur, and you know, that was the weirdest thing to sort of escape from. Like I'm late for something, and it's like, no, there's no boss waiting for you. You know, as long as you do your stuff, you're good. You know, your day is good. But also, I found myself making some of the mistakes that I would correct in my own teams. You know, like I'm spending way too much time on wireframing. I shouldn't be, you know, I shouldn't be aligning everything and working so hard on the layout if we're just trying to do the initial discovery. So, and that was, it's a very rookie mistake that I wouldn't expect myself, you know, with my background to be doing. But that was sort of like the beginning of what I was doing. I've been doing this for almost a year with my current team. We're, you know, very happy. And at this moment, I feel like even though my team is very, very small, we have such a great rhythm going. We have very good synergy. Actually, the people, I'm a big believer on keeping the people that work well with you as well. So, you know, I'm not hiring anybody out of HBO or anything like that. But some of the people that are working with me right now, they've worked with me in the past. Obviously, my wife, we work together all the time. But the designer that I mentioned from Puerto Rico, He worked with me actually at HBO, and my previous company that I had a consulting company for about 2 years. He also helped me with the design and management back then.
Small question off topic. How does it feel to work with your own wife?
a lot of people say that you shouldn't hire your friends and you shouldn't hire the people closest to you. But I'm of the opposite school of thought. You know, we go together through great times and difficult times, and we know how to work with each other at home and at work. I think that the more that you know a person, the easier it is to work with them. We have similar tastes as far as design. We have similar processes, and you know, I'm comfortable talking to her. She's comfortable talking to me, which actually is the root of a lot of issues at companies when people don't know how to communicate or they don't feel empowered to do so. As my wife, obviously, she'll tell me anything that bothers her, but also I feel inclined to really help her because I feel committed to her success as well.
Yeah, I should say you're just one lucky man there.
I am. I really am.
What do you enjoy the most and the least about your work?
I don't want to give you like sort of like a default answer, but again, I'm really lucky to truly enjoy what I do. It makes me happy on a day to day. I'm passionate about this, but I would say that the moments that I like the most is getting perspective from someone else. Sometimes I'll be thinking about an issue or a problem for so long, sleeping on it, trying to come up with different concepts, and I'll even arrive at a few angles to solve that issue. But then I talk to someone else and they throw a curveball at me, and it changes the entire landscape. Like I especially like those little eureka moments of, I'm not building this for myself. You know, I'm building it for people. Getting that perspective is just fantastic.
Awesome. And what about the least part?
it's a difficult question, I would say. We're talking about a little bit of my previous career being a hiring manager. Unfortunately, when you're a hiring manager, you're also a firing manager sometimes. And that's something that I will never, ever get comfortable with. I mean, I like to gel with my team. I like to be involved in the everyday, not get in the way. I like to see them succeed. And of course, when that doesn't align with either the company or they're just not a good fit for the team, and you discover it a little bit later in the game, it's just so difficult. So those were like especially bad days for me when I had to let somebody go.
So Alberto, what is your next big thing for Tag Digital or yourself personally?
Well, in general, I hope we launch our Field.ai beta in May. Like I said, we're accepting beta signups right now. It's a huge milestone for us, and to me, it really means the start of our project. We've been working on it for a few months, but I know enough to know that your project really starts when you launch it and you start receiving feedback from early adopters. So I'm really, really curious about what's going to happen, and hopefully it'll go well.
That's so true. And I wish you good luck in that, because it's a journey that's going to start as soon as you click that launch button and allow your users in.
We'll see. It's just such a huge undertaking. People don't often know or they don't realize until they start, working on a product how much is involved in actually launching something. There's a huge list. We have a list of over 150 things that we have to achieve before we actually launch the beta. It can be daunting, but it's also fun. It keeps that day-to-day workflow, good variety on a day-to-day workflow.
Absolutely. Yeah. So going to our main topic, one of my first questions was the question of size for a UX team. And you already mentioned when we were talking about team at HBO that team of 6 to 10 designers is considered large in the realm of software.
Yeah, I would say so. And to me, it's one of those things where I think size doesn't, you know, size doesn't really matter in terms of how many people you have in your team, as long as you all get to work on. Sometimes you'll see products with just one team member. I mean, to me personally, that doesn't really work at a personal level, because I do like having people involved in the product that are able to, you know, bounce ideas off of and get specific design feedback as well. But you know, I've seen really successful teams of 2-3 people, and I've seen teams of huge teams of like 15 people that are not doing very well, just because, you know, there might not be a sense of priority, or the team might be, you know, the team is great, but they're not working for the right company, so they're like demoralized, and they don't really have a chance to succeed in what they want to do. So it just really depends on the qualities of said team. You know, it can be a team of 3 people, but you know, that there's certain key phrases that I have to describe, you know, what to me what makes a successful team.
And what are these?
I ran.
Gee, that was a good question, right?
Yeah, I wrote an article about this, and yeah. So what I put is empathy, humility, expressiveness, diplomacy, which I think, you know, it's an interesting combination, because as designers, we tend to excel a lot at one or two of these. So I think that's what makes a team, you know, having different people as part of a team is important. You know, it's that shift in culture where we all coexist as a design team, and we all have our strengths and weaknesses, but we're complementary to each other, which is, you know, I'm a big fan of that.
Can you please recap briefly these categories, these characteristics that you mentioned, what they mean in actual everyday life for designers?
Yeah. So I talk a little bit about empathy, and I think what empathy at least means to me is that, you know, when you're working for a business, it could be a very one-sided conversation. It could all be about the business goals and how we're going to make the users, you know, sign up, and we're going to make the users do this and put a paywall in front of them. But you're often so focused on winning as a business that you forget the person who's actually gonna be using your product. So it's important that it's a huge thing to have in your user experience team, somebody that can really step into the user's shoes and look back at the company and is able to align the business goals with the user goals. User goals are something that we don't necessarily map out on a day-to-day basis, that we don't plan out. And it's always good to have that loud voice of, you know, advocating for the user within the team.
Absolutely.
I think the next one that I wrote about was humility. And it's really, if you're in UX, you have to be humble. Like, there's no way that you can be too proud and about your work to the point where you're completely set in your idea and you're not able to shift. I mean, one thing about UX is really a house of cards. You're working with something that will shift in nature. You're going to continue to build upon, but sometimes you have to almost destroy some of the stuff that you've made and either start from scratch or really pivot into something that is going to resonate better with your audience, with the users. So humility plays a big part. You know, somebody that it's not overly emotionally attached to their work. I think we all are to a certain extent. It feels bad when we've worked really, really hard and made a lot of research. But at the end of the day, it takes somebody that says, it's okay. You know, the reason why we're shifting is because this is the best thing for our product and for the user journey. So that's something that it's crucial for a UX team. I talk about expressiveness as well in my article. By the way, this is in my blog. Expressiveness, sometimes you'll see people with a lot of good ideas and they go unnoticed just because they don't, maybe there's people with a stronger personality in the team and they don't feel like they should be outspoken. And one of the things that I worked really, really hard when building a team is ensuring that there's an equal ground for people to share ideas. Expressiveness is very important. You know, we are in a creative field, which means that not 100% of the population might think in the same terms as us. So we have to be able to express and to communicate, you know, some of these ideas either in a visual way, so people can understand it, or really think about it and put it in terms that people can relate to. When you're working for a company, we all have a common goal. So it is important, if your ideas are going to contribute to that common goal, you should be able to really express it.
What are the specific ways that you instill to make people, to empower people to speak up, even if they're humble by nature?
I think on a day-to-day, you'll see certain traits. You know, if people tend to be more reserved, I try to take them on either a one-on-one approach or with a softer set of, I'll think about who is going to be on this meeting, for example, right? And I'll invite people that are sort of complementary to what this person has to say. Sometimes you as a manager, you really have to build up their courage as well and say, hey, you know, you should be presenting this. Like, this is very big. This idea is really good. I think it can really work. You've detailed why this would work, so there's no reason why you shouldn't be, you know, putting these out there. If hopefully that one-on-one works, if it's beyond the point of, you know, I'm just like really nervous, I don't want to present this in front of executives or in front of a client or anything, of course, you know, I'll either look for somebody else in the team that shines in that area, or I'll help them myself, you know, sort of like presenting the idea. But I'll make sure, and this is very important, that credit is given to the person that came up with the idea. So, you know, it not everybody has to be a public speaker, not everybody is, but just getting your ideas out on paper or documenting your ideas and expressing them or sharing them with other people in the team, that's very big.
And what was the fourth quality?
The fourth quality was diplomacy, and this is something too that it's a big issue. Diplomacy in the sense that, again, going back to what the goals are, we have to understand that as UX designers, as part of a corporation, we offer a big value, but that value is only true if it helps the company succeed at their business goals. Because a team can also lean the other way, where they're only thinking about the users, they're only thinking about, you know, the experience or beautiful design, but you forget that there are business strategies and business goals attached to this. So it takes a certain quality to be able to move from one team to the next and really understand. It plays on the empathy as well. Really understand that the product team or the finance team or the legal team or the social media team, they all have their goals. They all have their different strategies. So as a UX designer, my goal is to fit in between all of those and really just amplify, augment what they can do through design. And that's an important quality, I would say, to have in a team.
Yeah, these are very wise words. I can tell you've been in these shoes for years to be able to articulate these.
And sometimes you there's also such a thing as companies that are not ready for UX, believe it or not. And these are companies that don't necessarily can pinpoint the value that UX designers can bring, or designers in general can bring to the table. So, you know, especially in smaller markets, I live in Miami. This is no Silicon Valley, even though we're growing in the tech space. You know, when compared to Silicon Valley, it's like not even a blip on the radar, I would say. Well, actually, that's unfair. We are growing, and it's good that we're down here. But we have to work especially hard as designers to have business owners understand we're providing something really valuable. You know, we can succeed together, but you have to have that mentality. you can't have the mentality of, I don't understand this person. They don't see the design. They don't want to pay my rates. You know, like we can't have that mentality because, you know, they might not speak in the same terms. So we have to be the translators.
Right. Have you seen, I'm sure you have, situations when there is a budget for a UX team and there are actual people in place, but the organizational structure works so that they don't have that influence at all. And it's all like shouting in the dark or something like that.
All the time. Actually, that's what I would say in my experience. That's the norm. And it's sad, but it's such a great challenge, Jane. You know, when you have companies like this, you get to work for them, you get to build a team, you get to empower the team to have this level of communication with other teams. You start making waves within the company, and you start noticing a cultural shift where, you know, there's mutual respect across different teams. It's a big challenge, you know. Part of what we do is we design a lot of stuff that never launch, and that's, you know, that's part of what we do.
That happens all the time.
That's part of what we do. You know, and it might suck a little bit, you know, or a lot, but at the same time, you know, one thing that I would tell my team members is focus on the little wins. You know, if you look at it with an objective eye and see, you know, like we went from not being considered at all to now being part of the strategy sessions every 2 weeks, or now they're sending us, you know, the sort of like the social media reports over email. You know, just those little wins mean, you know, you're getting integrated as part of a company that now recognizes that you're part of the team, you're part of the goal. And I say this also with a little bit of confidence or a lot of confidence. You know, a lot of the reasons why companies might not necessarily recognize design is because us as designers are not communicating the value of design to that company. You know, there's companies that are just not the right fit. And, you know, we live in a globalized world where if something is not working, we should be the owners of our profession and move on, you know, to a company that will value us most. But don't give up on a company just because they don't see it right off the bat. You know, work hard on polishing your communication skills and explain why design is so valuable.
Right. We had an episode here with Danny Setyalan of The Economist, and he was preaching a few of these ideas, what you can do. And one of them was taking these little wins that you mentioned and turning them into stories and allowing people to share those stories with their leadership so that they look better in their eyes. And that kind of builds a positive vibe around the UX and that it can make you look better in front of your own boss.
and it translates to value. I mean, your boss is trying to figure out probably, you know, why do we have these designers here? You know, what is it that, and if you don't communicate, how are we winning? How are we contributing? You know, you need to figure out a way to do that. there's also some other companies that are, you know, I have had the pleasure to work with many of them where they have design at their core. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were interviewing somebody from MailChimp, and I was like, God, companies where the CEO is super involved in design, and it's so important and at their core, you know, but, you know, some other companies are just diamond in the rough. You know, they could be like that too. If you bring the right mentality, the right energy, you know, it's up to us as designers. It really is.
Absolutely. Going back to the team itself, I've seen two models work. One is when there's clear leadership, would that be a creative director, art director, whoever you call it. Yeah. And the other would be when people on the team, they report to individual product managers and they kind of have like a plethora of mini bosses. Which do you think is more effective, or is there a combination of two?
I think organizing a common voice, if it's not done for you, you should really aspire to try to build that around you. And it can be very, very frustrating. You know, there's companies, like I mentioned before, that are not necessarily ready for UX, or for having a design team where the design team can be alienated. But again, I go back to the communicating how important it is that we're part of this organization. And that also comes into play with the structure of how we receive direction as a team. Some companies might have just a green field and you figure it out sort of environment, which can be very dangerous if the team doesn't truly understand what the business goals are. What are we really shooting for? So I'm conducting focus group sessions to improve our onboarding, but the overall goal of the company is to launch a new feature by next year. So we should be doing research instead of focusing on something else. So it's important for an organization. I would say the former is more successful of the both examples that you present, where there's a common voice. If there's not one, I think is up to the team to identify that and communicate with everybody. Hey, we have all these mini bosses. You know, we're reporting to all of these people. There are diplomatic ways of doing that as well. So when you, again, if you translate it to, if we have a common voice, it'll translate into true business value and a common alignment with the company goals. I think that's an easy sell. It's just a matter of how do you put that into context and how do you communicate it to the people above you. And, you know, if it's not heard, it might not be the right company for having that type of structure, you know?
Right. I also think that some kind of leadership is necessary to somewhat educate and bring a certain system or a process from the top so that the process is unified across all these people, and also to kind of protect them from the hostile environment that they're in.
Yeah.
Nurture the talent and protect them.
I think to me, leadership has also become over the years as putting opportunities in the spotlight. I would get a demoralized team, for example, because we ended up hiring some really good developers as part of the UX team. That's something that it's dear to my heart because of what I said about my background. You know, I started looking into HTML and CSS. Now we're talking about micro interactions and you know what the polishes that you can make on a platform to feel like it's something that feel like Stripe, for example, that looks like something that a lot of care has been put into it. And to me, the best way of doing that is having design and development work together, kind of like the Art and Copy documentary. If you haven't seen it, it's fantastic. But we end up, you know, outsourcing the development, and the developers as part of the team, they're like super bummed out. And I would have to take a step back and tell them, well, this is a unique opportunity. You know, it's not ideal, but that means is that now you have this team at your disposal and you're going to be directing them. So it's time for you to, you know, to work on your leadership skills and work on your communication skills. So, you know, I try to always sort of like flip the coin and, out of situations that might immediately look like, oh man, this is such a drag, turn them into opportunities of, you know what? You know, that makes sense. It's not ideal, but I have more time to do the things that are important to me, and I'm going to be growing professionally in this area.
Exactly. And I think we should all understand that there is that level of polish which distinguishes, you know, MailChimp from all these bootstrap products out there. And we think that it's unachievable. And it mostly is because of the waterfall approach, when there is, you know, subcontract designer who works on something and then quits. And then the thing is just passed over without much consideration. But if you organize your team the right way, just as you mentioned, it can be done in-house with not much extra effort. I mean, it does take effort, but it just takes some unity between the designer and developer and some time to sit together and polish it.
Yeah.
That's
it.
But no one does it.
And it's a question of timing too. I think if you have a lean operation, as we do now at Tag Digital, you know, we're in the pre-beta phase, and as much as I would love to spend all the time in the world making sure that everything, you know, has that extra level of polish, we're really pre-MVP. And when we talk about MVP and lean strategies, MVP is, rather than minimum viable product, is minimum valuable product, right? And I think these these things, the biggest value of micro interaction is the user delight and the perception of this is a polished product. You know, this is something that a lot of care was put into it. In our case, we're still in the idea validation process, right? We're building something for the first time. We haven't released it, so it's part of my backlog, is what I mean to say, and it needs to be part of everybody's backlog. You know, if you have a product that has some, you know, some early level of success, you know, do put the work in and go back and, you know, again, creating user delight is something you're competing against a lot of products out there. Maybe even products that offer the same exact value as yours. So where you get to truly shine is through the design and through the user experience in general. This is something that companies, you know, this is part of our job to communicate to companies that this is the value that we bring. You know, you want to stand out against all of your competitors and everything. You know, I worked a lot in the media industry in Latin America, and needless to say, for all of them, for everybody that I've worked with, Netflix is the benchmark. You know, they all want to be at that level. And I'm like, yeah, but read about it online, you know, read how much they put into research, read how much they put into usability, into design, and having a cohesive experience across devices. That didn't come very easily for them. You know, they found that there's value in that, and they invested a lot of time and effort into that. And that's something that if we want to be at that level, we have to invest in the same ways.
Exactly. Going back to teams,
yes.
I digress. It's like we start with a team because a team is the core of any digital process, you know, and yeah. Then we deviate and then we go back to the team. And what do you think, what are the potential titles or talents you can bring to the table in a team? You mentioned the developer, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
What are talents or tools they use, or, you know, how do they balance it out among actual individuals?
Yes. So I think just having somebody that understands the process of design, and it's a big fan of the process of design in terms of fidelity, you know, to me, it's huge seeing somebody sketch something out, on a notebook or on a whiteboard. I feel like that brings that common thinking, allowing the team to pitch in, not necessarily brainstorm, but I see somebody that is organizing their ideas before they commit to execute them. And I also think that's very important for me because, you know, time is of the essence. And when you're trying to ship something, be it a new feature or a product altogether, you know, you got to find the places where you need to focus on, and being able to organize your ideas like that before the execution is really important to me. The other thing is just a polished designer or designers, you know, people that are... that are able to translate all of these concepts into just, you know, beautiful designs, and are able to also communicate with the development team of the importance of why does this have a certain padding? Why does this have to fit into this grid,
right,
and all of that?
Padding margins, my favorite one, right?
Well, we have great tools. You know, we have great tools like Zeppelin and Envision that have really, really bridge the gap between design and development. If you put them in the same room or in the same Slack channel, when I say room, I don't mean that you have to have an office somewhere. You know, they can be remotely, but still communicate effectively. I think those things can translate very well. You know, the importance of a solid grid, the importance of a layout, and all the breakpoints. You know, so you have that right now. What we have, let's do an inventory. You have somebody that can conceptualize at the wireframe or sketching phase. You have somebody that can design and communicate with development. You have a developer that is able to translate those designs and understand the importance of them. So then you need somebody to communicate, and these could be the same people, by the way, to communicate the importance of the decisions being made, and somebody that is just, to me, I love this, that is obsessed with research, you know, somebody that is not only researching a lot and understanding what the problem at hand is and how to solve them, but also once we have an idea of how to solve them, is going back and validating with people, be it other teams, potential users. I love research a lot. So I like having that as part of the team. I think, you know, it's a huge component, and we often miss that. You know, we go on and hire, and I understand why. We take somebody from HR and we say, hey, I need three amazing designers. They send me a bunch of portfolios, and I pick the best three. I interview them. They're a good cultural fit, and I'm like, yeah, they can design. But then I'm crippled because I have all this design power. But then I don't have any research power. I don't have any, you know, so creating that balance, you need people with different skill sets. It also that, as a hiring. Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
That person who does research, do you usually find that it's a person who does like wireframing, for example?
In my case, in my experience, they have been the people that do the wireframes, that are part of the, and I don't like sort of like segregating people either. You know, we all work together, but you look for, as a hiring manager, you do look for those strengths. And like I said, a lot of these different qualities can be achieved by the same person in some cases.
So I imagine it would be wise to say that there can be an overlap, but usually it's like somewhere, you know, in the sequence of these steps. So it's, for example, a research person who can wireframe, maybe mm-hmm. do visual design at some point. It's a wireframing person who can do visual design. It's a coding visual designer, et cetera, somewhere
exactly.
among that.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I've met people that can do multiple things very, very well. You know, for me, that wasn't the case. For example, when I learned HTML and CSS, I knew that I wanted to learn just enough to understand, sort of what it takes to build something, just so that I could be a more effective designer. But, you know, front end development or development in general wasn't my calling, or it didn't feel like it.
Do you feel like it is today?
It's I love having very talented people working right next to me. I wouldn't necessarily open my text editor and start typing away. I feel that there's I like people that shine in those areas being close to me. I also and I think I put this in one of my blog post, that a Swiss Army knife to me is not the best knife. It's not the best toothpick. It's not the best screwdriver. So I like people that specialize in something. I tend to work better with those. But like I said, you know, I've met my fair share of people. One of my very good friends, he's a solo designer at our company, and he does the design, and he develops live prototypes that he then goes out and tests. And it's just, you know, a symptom of his environment, just because they're not at the point where they can hire an entire team, and he's doing a killer job of all of those things, you know, and he's helping the company succeed. You know, and I've worked with people like that in the past. I'm not saying that they don't exist. But if I was building a team, you know, I tend to, and I have a nice budget, you know, I'll tend to look for people that specialize in a specific area.
Right. I would like to also mention a few areas that are kind of adjacent to UX, not necessarily UX, but somewhat design, that is probably illustration related to icon design, or a subset of also video production people who can produce assets for you to work with.
Yeah.
And it's valuable to have those at your disposal. I don't know what department they should, you know, classify in.
And it's part of general design. I mean, I try to not mix product design too much with the rest of the design. You know, in a big organization, you will definitely have your UX design team, and there might be another team that focuses on processing images, or you know, designing like web banners or you know, stuff for social media, and those mm-hmm. those tend, you know, I I've I believe in lean teams too. You know, if you're in a startup, you're designing your website, and you're designing your t-shirt, and you're designing the mug and the giveaways for you know, your booth at an event. But you know, those things, I do think that you need a, if you have a successful product and you need a little bit of focus, so you should draw a line and differentiate between those.
Absolutely, that's so wise. Because these needs by marketing department, they might be minor, all these mugs and banners and other things, but they usually have very tight deadlines, which kind of distracts with your big goals of building a better product.
However, one thing that I like to add there is that they should all be in unison. You know, and this is something that I've seen. I keep using HBO as an example, just because that's my most recent. You know, that's where I worked most recently. And one thing that they do successfully, I would say, is to understand that if I'm a UI designer and I'm not part of the social media team, but we should be in constant communication. There's an overarching brand, you know, a legacy brand that we have to understand. There's a voice, because every department has a voice. You know, the way we communicate in social media, the way HBO communicates via the TV, and the way it communicates through their apps like HBO Go, it should feel like the same person is talking to you, like HBO is talking to you, not like a millennial, you know, is talking to you in social media, really old person talking to you through the TV, you know what I mean? Like it should feel like the same product, the same force is behind all of this effort, even if different teams are involved. So I think it's important also to have that brand guideline that everybody sort of like sticks to and works around.
That's so true. When it comes to a huge brand, with you know, departments all over the world, do you recall any special tools, methods, or ways of keeping that cohesive? As an example, we had founder of Frontify here on the podcast, Roger Dudler, and he was talking about, you know, these brand guidelines. Document, which is interactive, is in a line, was precious for big companies. What about HBO?
Well, I was lucky enough that HBO, by the way, HBO Latin America is the company that I worked for, so it's actually separate from HBO US.
There we go.
and they have HBO Europe. We all work together, but it's separate companies, actually. I think overall they did a really good job, just because they had these, it's part of your onboarding package. So when I joined the company, they gave me this book, and, you know, I went through it, as the leader of my team. I felt very responsible for, understanding the nuances behind the brand, and all of that. But at the same time, HBO itself was going through a transformation where the product for Latin America looked too much, too similar. It was, in fact, a carbon copy of the U.S. Product, and it didn't communicate as well with Latin America. So we wanted to introduce, you know, more color. We wanted to introduce, you know, Latin America is not a single country. It's so many from country to country. Each region is very different, you know, and we wanted to reflect those personalities through the design, through the brand. And so it was cool because, yes, we had the guidelines, but we had an opportunity to influence that brand guideline into something transformative, something new that we were doing. So it was a pretty unique position. The company that I worked prior to that, which was also a video on demand service for Latin America, was going through an equal transformation. You know, they had an ongoing product that they had for years. And it was time to do sort of like the 2.0 and rename it, do a whole new brand. And that was a lot of fun to do, as well. So, you don't want to, as a company, you don't want to put everybody in a box, but you want them to learn and commit to what the brand is and not deviate too far from that, because that can be alienating to the user. You know, if you're moving from TV to your iPad, it should feel like the same product. It shouldn't feel like something completely different.
Absolutely. Have a few smaller questions.
Yes.
Well, not smaller. I guess they're equally important. One touches the life cycle of the member of your team, from hiring to, you know, onboarding to growth, which is also very important. I've seen many people getting hired, getting trained by me personally, and then when they start to make sense of what they do, for about half a year, they're like a working horse, you know, doing everything you pile up on them, and they do it really well, and then they quit.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, so, I can count it on both hands.
I'm actually okay with that, to be honest. Just because you know, you're committing to a company, but you're also committed to yourself. And I think we live in a world where... you know, you have to go out and get what you're looking for. Sometimes it could be due to various reasons. You know, if it's a financial decision, which it often is, I try to work, this person is brilliant. I try to work with the company and say, you know, we're if we let this happen, we're losing a lot, you know. So let's work with them. Let's align with what their goals are. If it's a financial situation, you know, sometimes... just the product is in a good state, and you know, they feel like they want to develop some other talents that are not being used as much. That's been the case with me as well, you know, and I'm this is true for me. You know, I moved from being a manager for HBO to building my own company with some of my peers, you know, and it wasn't a move against HBO. And I think that's as hiring managers, we need to understand that. I mean, there's also the school of thought of people don't quit jobs. They quit, you know, their managers. But at the same time, I'm confident that the people that have moved on from being on my team, hopefully, you know, but you know, that's what I tell myself, that they're not moving away from me. And in fact, there's proof, because they actually contact me, you know, to tell me how they're doing and everything. I contact them. We keep good relationships after that. At the end of the day, you know, you have to work for your own goals. And if you need to grow professionally in some way, or there's something that strikes your fancy in terms of, you know, it sounds like a super interesting product, they have a good opportunity that you just can't let go, there has to be that mutual honesty between manager and employee to be like, hey, you know what, that sounds like a great opportunity, you know, I wish we could match that, but that sounds great, you know, I wish you all the luck in the world. You have to have that. Otherwise, you're going to end up making a lot of enemies along the way, and it's, you know, it doesn't, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. There's a lot of talented people, and they're all looking for their you know, their North Star to follow.
Yeah, I think parting ways amicably is a super important skill for all parties. And I've seen managers doing, you know, like reversing tables as soon as they get the news about someone getting someone quitting. You don't want to be in that situation. Like, they instantly recollect everything bad and explain everything like, oh, we didn't even want you on the team, et cetera, et cetera. And that's too common just to ignore. I mean, you can see it all around the place. That's a human trait. But we should fight that and try to be friends, whatever the reasons are.
I think your team and your environment is your product as well, you know, and when we look at, when we look at our own products, you know, the product that you just built, I'm sure you've thought enough about the onboarding process and the offboarding process. You know, what happens when somebody wants to cancel, when somebody wants to, you know, they don't want to convert or anything like that. I think the same is true for a company. You know, you have to think, you have your onboarding process in place. You know, you've documented everything, what it takes to be a part of this team. You have to be ready for the end of that relationship. And how do you manage that? How do you transition this person so that they still feel encouraged? You know, you don't want to bum them out on their way out. That's no way of being a good manager.
Absolutely. And right, I can't help but mention Natalie Nigel of WildBit, because she's an active propagandist of that team first approach. They are a product company, but whatever product they build, their team always comes first. Their team's welfare, their relationships, and products can come and go, but the team remains. And I can also recall Balsamic as being one of such teams where the team is always the first.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important. We're people. We're people working together. You know, we have this, we have the Silicon Valley goggles on of what success means, you know. But really, success at a deep level means that everybody around you is fulfilled, you know, that is being successful. That includes yourself and the people that work with you. If something is missing there, then, you know, you can take off the Silicon Valley goggles and, you know, we can be a beautiful relationship on Instagram, but we have to deal with each other on a day-to-day, you know. You have to take care of that. You have to take care of that.
That's so true. A couple more things that need to be mentioned before we wrap this up, which is financial compensation, overtime, you know, incentives, financial incentive and financial punishments, anything that relates to that, because we are in the economic realm and money is a part of the equation. What's your take on that?
My take on that is to do enough research to know, you know, how the industry is taking care of people and trying to be better. you want to be the best company to work for. But at the same time, you know, there's a reality, you know, there's checks and balances, and especially for startups, this is very, very true. You know, align what your goals are. You know, maybe design to the extent where you want to see it is not the right move at this time. So you have to align with the people that you're hiring. It's not a competition, you know, it's not a competition. Can we afford you? We want to pay you what you're worth. Or, you know, if everybody has the ability to either walk away from an offer, yeah, they're not offering enough for me to want to join their company, because I'm not going to join a company and then be resentful about it every single day or whenever I get my paycheck. And at the same time, the company has to be realistic of, you know, this is what design is worth, you know, this is what's fair. So if you're looking to undercut the entire industry and offer something really cheap, you're gonna get what you pay for. You know, that's, design is one of the truer places where you really get what you pay for.
Right.
So hey, and there's people that are not at the level that you expect yet, but they might be diamonds in the rough too. You know, you have to, if it fits your timeline, if it fits your roadmap to actually develop something, or not something, sorry, to develop someone to where you want them to, you know, be, and that aligns with that person, maybe it's a good, you know, it's a good match. We do that all the time. I mean, we do it for ourselves too. We still take online courses. I was listening to one of your episodes and her name escapes me, but the behavioral scientist, and they have these UX courses online focused
Susan
on
Weinschenk.
Strategy. Oh my God. That was that episode. I mean, seriously, revelation. It was so good.
Great.
So now, you know, the first thing that I did was talk to my partners and I'm like, hey, we should all take this certification, you know, and we should aspire to do the same for the people that we hire. You know, we want them to succeed with us, and that means that they need to succeed as well as part of our team.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for such an amazing load of knowledge that everyone can apply. This
thank
is
you.
Super
I'm
precious.
Thank you so much.
Where can people find you online?
I am on Twitter, twitter.com/AlbertoJOrsini. Also on facebook.com/AlbertoJOrsini. I don't use Facebook that much. I'm also on Instagram, which I use all the time. It's not necessarily design related, but it's Instagram/AlbertoOrsini without the J. And my website, AlbertoOrsini.com, which I am trying to update the blog as much as possible now. And that's my main goal on my plate right now, is to like actually write a lot of the stuff that I have in my head.
You should do. That's fantastic. All right. Thank you. And well, I hope to talk to you once again. Have a wonderful day.
This has been such a great experience. Thank you so much for having me, Jane.
Thank you.